This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to Place to Be Nation's Main Event, a roundtable experience looking at today's pro wrestling landscape. And now, here's your host, Scott Criscolo.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to your home for everything modern day wrestling, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. I'm your host, Scott Criscolo. We have a fantastic show for you tonight, and I always get excited when we have a main event debut, and this guy is particularly special because I haven't been on with him on a show in eons, but I'm looking forward to it tonight. And we have, if we can find him, a regular. He's been on Main Event a few times, he's part of our core four. Not the core four here on Main Event, but one of our godfathers. But we'll when he gets on, we'll introduce him. But I want to introduce our guest this evening. And yes, we'll talk Money in the Bank. We'll do that later. I want to introduce, for those that are new to Place to Be Nation, and if you're new to the website or any of our podcasts, welcome. It's an honor to have you here. Thanks for clicking. As you can tell, as you're travailing the site, we have a myriad of podcasts and, of course, written stuff as well. But we have a myriad of podcasts. We have multiple feeds. Of course, most of my shows are on the Place to Be Nation feed, of course, this one, and the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, myself and Mr. Rosero. But my guest this evening owns the other big wrestling feed that we have. And that is the PWO feed. Of course, everyone isn't sure what PWO is. It always seemed very mysterious in the realm of wrestling and the internet. But this gentleman is one of my favorite people to listen to, and he's the host of I don't even know how many shows. He's logged more hours recording podcasts than I could even shake a stick at. But we want to bring in, let me see if I can get them all right. And if not, he'll remind me what shows I've missed, but he is the co-host of Between the Sheets with Mr. Bixenspan, which I have listening to the back catalog, and it is exceptional. We'll talk about what that means. We have Exile. Oh, wait. I have to do it the Parv way.
Exile on Bad Street.
sounds like a Doctor Who villain. But and a myriad of other shows that I'm probably not getting, that I'm not thinking of or not sure whether he is or not. Tag Team's back again?
No. Not me.
That's a great show, though. Mr. Chris Zellner, KZ, welcome to the Main Event.
It's nice to be here, Scott. Yeah, it's been a while since we've done audio together on the reaction shows. Of course, I'm on those
every
month on here.
You'll be on probably tonight after Money in the Bank. The problem with the reaction shows was I got to be at work early, and our good old Will from wherever he's living soon likes to record until, 5 o'clock in the morning. So after a while I had to tap out, but I'll make a return. I guarantee I'll make a return. I did want to do the 2016 Rumble, based on who won it, but I'm sure no one would have wanted me on, but
I think we had like 6 or 7 people on that.
Oh yeah. Too. Yeah. It was
a big table.
Yeah. Enough spots to cover up. So the Triple H fans couldn't get in, but, anyway, Chris, man, it's an honor and a privilege to have you on. We'll get into your shows when we come out of the break, because they're all so fascinating and you've got such unique formats for your shows. Why don't we talk about Between the Sheets first? But before we do that, let me start from the beginning. Because again, a lot of our Place to Be Nation listeners may not have dived into the PWO feed yet and may have just heard you from the reaction shows. Obviously, based on your accent, you're from Chad Campbell country. Tell us where you're from and how you became a wrestling fan.
I'm from Barnesville, Georgia, which is about 45 minutes south of Atlanta, between Atlanta and Macon. So we're in the dead in the middle, just about, of the two big cities in the state. And Georgia, I remember I was born in 79. So in the 80s, Georgia was the capital of wrestling, just about it. The Omni was the place to be. You know, of course, on Turner Television, you had, right. You know, Crockett was running their most of their main shows out of there and taping in Atlanta, and Georgia Championship Wrestling, of course, World Championship Wrestling, which was, you know, I was a very little boy when that was going on. But, yeah, and then they, WCW, when they became WCW, they taped a lot of shows in Georgia. So right. There were shows in Macon, Savannah, Augusta, Atlanta, Columbus, Gainesville.
I remember there seemed to be a clash in Georgia, like, at least once a year. It seemed like between, like, 91 and 95, there seemed to be at least one, maybe not a pay-per-view, although I'm sure there was, at least one pay-per-view maybe and one clash in the state of Georgia between, like, 90 and 95. Just seemed like it, you know?
Well, there were two in 91, and, you know, there was a clash and pay-per-view in Chattanooga, which is almost in Georgia.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah, it was the home base, and it was easy for – they were cutting costs and stuff in this time period, so they just wanted to run close to home and not have to do a lot of traveling. So it was beneficial to all the local fans that were right. able to get out and about.
Right.
So, I mean, I've watched wrestling all my life. I've been watching wrestling as long as I can remember. Since about 5 years old, I can remember watching wrestling on television in 84. So right. The first thing I remember is Buzz Sawyer and Tommy Rich, you know, battling it out on television, you know,
right.
stuff like that. So – and I know a lot of people that, you know, they go in and out of wrestling fandom and stuff like that, but I've been pretty dedicated for the last 32 years. So it's a love of mine. I love all sports, but wrestling is just a love and a passion.
No, hey man, I got to tell you something. I was born in 73, so I'm not that much older than you, and it's nice to actually talk to. We have very few fans who were actually watching in the 80s at Placement Nation. Of course, our man J. Arsenio D'Amato is actually a little older than I am. Of course, my man Dr. G, George Blino, was born. He actually, I got to get him on with you on a main event because he grew up in Florida, so he was right in the middle of Graham country. So,
oh, yeah.
So he was, but he had everything. See, I grew up in Connecticut, so I had, you know, obviously I had my WWF wheelhouse. I had my Saturday night heel fix. I needed my weekly horseman fix. I do remember the Saturday, or what was it, Saturday Night Massacre, or whatever the nickname was when Vince bought the block.
Black Saturday.
Black Saturday. I actually remember watching that. I was 11, so I do remember watching that. But unfortunately, we here in the Northeast really didn't get that. I mean, like, unless I read my PWI, I don't really remember. I didn't get into the Georgia stuff and some of the smaller promotions, Continental, even Memphis, until the early 90s when I was getting some tapes. But
well, see, that's where we had an advantage too, because as well as having that television, we had on WATL Channel 36, Joe Pedicino in 1985
right.
started his Superstars of Wrestling block,
that's right. Yep,
which originally started out as a 3-hour block and eventually blossomed into a 7-hour block. And it was always after World Championship Wrestling would go off the air at 8 o'clock, 8:05.
Right.
So you would watch 2 hours on TBS. TBS would go off, and then you would have a chance to watch up to 7 more hours of wrestling after.
Right.
So that's 9 hours right there. That's not counting with me being in the middle of Atlanta and Macon, having Macon television. You know, when they would air the syndicated shows or whatever random syndicated shows would show up off of Atlanta TV on Saturday. So there were times there where I could watch wrestling on Saturday from pretty much maybe 12 hours.
Wow. Yeah, that's crazy.
everything. Just every promotion.
Yeah. I mean, that's crazy. That's crazy. You got, because and my buddy, like I said, my buddy, the doctor who's on often here on Main Event, like I said, he lived in Tamarack, which was a suburb of, like near Miami, Fort Lauderdale. And he had, you know, he had Georgia, he had Memphis, he got, he didn't get Mid-South, which I thought was odd. Did you get any Mid-South?
Mid-South was like the anchor of Pedicino's block. I mean, right. That would be like, that was the first show that would air.
Okay.
And then originally, and then they worked it in, but yeah, we had both Mid-South and Power Pro.
Okay. Who were some of your first favorite guys?
Oh, Flair, obviously.
Well, yeah, duh.
Flair is just, you know, even though he was a heel when I was a kid, I still loved him. And Dusty, so, I love Dusty. I love Magnum. I was a huge fan of Ted DiBiase.
Mm-hmm.
I just really got into him. Love the Freebirds because they, of course, Exile on Bad Street is just the natural thing. I mean, I love the Freebirds. They were legends in Georgia. Just so many. I was in the Lawler. I was in the Piper. I was in the Savage. All the main players. So Hogan, come and go with Hogan. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, those are a lot of my favorites. Barry Windham. I always like Barry Windham. The Road Warriors.
Right, too. Well, they're my favorite tag team of all time. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much a lot of the top guys. There wasn't a whole lot of guys I really didn't like. You know, so I can pretty much get into just about everybody.
Let me ask you something. Growing up in the South, I've asked Chad this too. Was there a wrestling culture line of guys, you know, like the Southern fans who loved, like I said, loved Big Dust, loved Flair, Magnum, Road Warriors, Koloffs, you know, but couldn't stand the Hogans and the, you know, maybe Piper, because Piper was in Mid-Atlantic, but, you know, and all the cartoony guys. What do you think as a kid living down there that there was really a culture divide between the WWF and everybody else?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And they never drew that well. Down here, and they really didn't start drawing extremely well until maybe like the early 90s, maybe late 80s at the earliest. But people watched. I mean, you watched it because it was wrestling. But when you saw guys that you knew, like you know, Butch Reed, example, or somebody like that, who you knew from Mid-South and stuff like that. And then he goes to the WWF, they dye his hair blonde, he becomes a natural. When they repackage guys into different gimmicks or different names, you know, that it made us seem cartoony. You know, when they gave polka dots to Dusty, you know, that was like, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
You know, if you didn't know the deal, or, you know, different things like that, just the repackaging of guys that was kind of, you know, silly. I mean, it was seen as silly where, you know, you watch Crockett television and there was more of a believability to that show,
mm-hmm,
than it was WWF.
Right.
WWF was entertainment. You watched that to be entertained, basically.
Right. Now, you mentioned, there's one guy that always used to make me laugh as a kid. I want to talk about some personalities in the 80s. And one guy that always made me laugh, and I didn't really know, I shouldn't say made me laugh, but you mentioned Tommy Rich before. And I know Tommy Rich has a legacy in the South. You know, big feud, like so him and Buzz. Obviously, him and Harley, and he had the cup of coffee with the title. But that's us up in here in the North, though, stuff like that used to make me laugh. Like, how'd this guy win a belt for like a day, you know, or whatever it was. Like, there was like some weird, like, I was a stat junkie when I was a kid in terms of wrestling. So obviously, all the top tens that were in the PWI, and I'd look at all the champions and everything, and I'm like, Tommy Rich held the belt for like 9 days.
No, what was less than that. He won it on a Monday and lost it on Friday.
It's crazy.
He won it on Monday in Augusta and lost it on Friday in Gainesville at the Georgia Mountain Center. And they got him to TV so he could cut promos with the belt.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because TV was taped on Saturday. So they got him there. So they actually did a promo with him with the belt, but they aired on television. But he never was on a TV taping proper with the belt.
That's funny. So that must have been some kind
of deal. The deal is, though, with Tommy was he was probably the biggest box office star in the – well, not maybe box office, but the biggest known star in the country because of TBS's penetration in cable, which was growing and growing and growing, and he was the guy. So he was a bigger star than anybody, basically.
Right.
He was going around the country doing shots in San Francisco or Houston and – different places. He went to Madison Square Garden and worked, you know what I mean?
Yeah. That's funny. Was there a political thing with, like, Harley and Barnett? Is that why, like, why did it only last – first of all,
well,
Harley lose it in the first place, and secondly, why did it only last 5 days?
It's one of those deals, you know, that Harley did that a lot. I mean, he did it in Japan with Baba. He did it in Florida with Dusty. It was just one of those things that happened in that era of the NWA.
Right.
you know, that when Jim Crockett was president, he would allow that type of stuff to happen. It was easier for that to go on than when it was, say, when Sam Muchnick was controlling the NWA, you know, the title. And Barnett was really controlling the champion anyway. He was the treasurer, and he booked the champion. So there you go. And
Rick
Barnett's guy.
Right, of course. No, he protected him big time. Well, I mentioned another guest this evening, and he has come on now, and he is not, unlike Mr. Zellner, who is making his debut this evening, this guy is not making his debut here on Main Event. And I say this every time he's on a podcast, I'm just not on with him enough. One of my favorite people to talk to. He's one of the four in the star chamber that created Place B Nation with myself and Mr. Rosero, Mr. Woodling, Chad Campbell. Hi, Chad.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, Chad.
Talking to you from tonight from Rome, Georgia, on location.
Oh, from Arn's house?
Arn Anderson country, yeah.
That's right. I just asked, we're just going over some, just KZ's, like, his life as a fan when he was a kid and who he watched and stuff. And you and I, we've talked plenty of times, Chad, about who your favorite guys were. But let me ask you something. Let me ask you the same question that I asked Chris a minute ago. When you were growing up in that neck of the woods, now, you're a little younger, obviously, than Chris and I were, but going back to everything you've watched, and you've watched a boatload of stuff, did you think in the 80s it felt like, while you were watching stuff, that there was a culture divide between Southern wrestling fans and, like, us Northern New England Hogan lovers? Did you feel there was a divide in the 80s from what you watched?
I mean, going back and watching stuff, I think there's definitely a different kind of style. I think you can see that now, especially. Mm-hmm. If you watch just any kind of Northeastern indie, like a Ring of Honor or Evolve, when they're up in the Northeast, or even when they're in Florida, they kind of carry the reputation. It'll be a lot different than if you just watch like a Georgia indie or an indie like a CWF Mid-Atlantic from North Carolina, kind of in the chants and the style, types of characters, like more of your traditional heel managers. There's kind of a different flavor that I think you still see persist, and that was true in the 80s as well.
Now, Chris, catching the back catalog of Between the Sheets, obviously you and Bix and your guest, extensive Japanese, Japan knowledge, New Japan, All Japan, you know, all the... honestly, I wasn't exposed to it. Most of the Japan I saw was tapes, and mostly it was, like, WWF guys going overseas. I have a bitchin'... I gotta find it. I have a great British Bulldogs comp when they were over there. What was that, like, 80...
84-85.
Yeah, 84-85. Oh my god, this comp is incredible. They're beating the snot out of guys. But when did you first get your taste of Japan?
89. Mm-hmm. And it was perfect timing because Great Muda had just got started in the NWA in that time period. And he was insanely over.
Oh yeah.
Babyface. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the big mistakes that was made by the NWA and WCW at that time, was not pushing him as babyface. But Gary Hart was firmly against that and, you know, pushed hard against it, and that's why it never happened. But I had access to tapes from a friend who got them from Japan, and I was able to watch the weekly television. Mm. And it was way different. And 89 was a great year. I mean, All Japan was really putting out strong television that year. New Japan was starting to, you know, get to the Hashimoto era, and you're starting to see the Russians coming in and all mm-hmm. this other stuff. They had a lot of great things going on. Liger, the birth of Jushin Thunder Liger was that year. So that's where I got the exposure to that, and I was into it ever since. And, you know, in 2002, when I started doing news online, which now I just do lucha stuff, but back then I was doing everything. Mm-hmm. I was doing Japan and US and everywhere. And, going to the Japanese sites and translating all that stuff. And that just gave me a renewed love for it. And that was during a time period in Japanese wrestling, which shoot style was starting to take over, and the independents was the only place you really, and other than like Noah and maybe All Japan, but I mean, it was just, that was the place where you had like the true traditional wrestling type stuff and all the different styles and all these different motions, which one thing is missing today, in Japanese wrestling. So, yeah, I mean, it's been 27 years. So, yeah, that's where my love for Japanese. And Lucha was the same time period. Was 89. Mm-hmm. Brought out a satellite dish, and he got the Galavision stuff, and that's where I started watching Lucha into it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Galavision.
Yep.
Yeah. And I don't remember that on my cable. That must have been like back in the days when you had like the gigantic satellite dish in your front yard.
Yes, he had the humongous satellite.
Everybody thought you were cool. Yeah.
Yeah, back in the days when you could watch like all the live station feeds that, you know, without commercials and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, and the swear words and, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny. When did you start watching, Chad, the Japanese stuff?
It was 2001. I was 15. Chris will recognize the guy. I bought my first tape from an individual named Tabe, T-A-B.
Yes.
It was on Death Valley Driver. It was right when I first found
DVD. I've seen that name before.
Yeah, he's an old school guy. Yeah, he has some good stuff. I mean, that was back in the days when you had all these different tape dealers.
Right.
Which is, you know, foreign now. You don't have that thing now. But and back then, videotapes were like $15 to $20 a piece. Now I know
my first order, I had to collect some of my Christmas cash.
I still gag when I look at like the price of like the 87 Survivor Series tape was like $49.99. I'm like, what?
That's what my brother spent on WrestleMania 3. I still have the Coliseum video here in my house.
Fuckers.
Well, I mean, okay. I used to buy from John McAdam, and he was the first guy I bought from online, buying all 80s stuff, and he was $20 a tape. So if you just bought 10 tapes, and it didn't matter the hours, it was 2 hours to 6 hours, it was the same price.
Wow.
So if you bought 10 tapes, that's $200 right there, easy. And that could be 20 to 60 hours.
Mm.
Now you could get all kinds of wrestling for $200.
I know, really.
Right.
We know people, you could buy 200 hours of 60 hours for $17.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
Yeah. Now let's talk about territories for a minute.
Okay.
I was just watching, I always go back to watch, cause I just giggle at the stories. The two of my favorite documentaries that are on the network is the AWA one and the World Class one. That was, I was exposed to that pretty much like everybody else did with, ESPN. And I taped like 18 tapes worth of stuff back in, oh God, when was it on ESPN Classic? Like 2010, I think.
And they aired it since then. And stuff
yeah,
like
so I've yeah. got a boatload of Larry Nelson tapes, and I always say, and I'm probably, hopefully I don't get sued, but although he passed away, so maybe not. When on the AWA documentary, when Bischoff said that there was an announcer that got pulled over for DUI the night before, and that's how he started his announcing career, I still think that's Larry Nelson. I think Larry.
Well,
I think Larry
could have been. It could have been. Larry was known to do cocaine. I mean, he was known to party. He was a party guy. He was a rock DJ. So that
yes,
went
it was yeah, yeah.
That went in the territory in that era. So
I know.
I mean, that stuff like that happened. If you watch Larry on television, you know, you probably see that he probably did a bump before the show started.
Oh, there's no doubt. And there's no doubt.
And that's what the charm is for him. I mean,
I know.
we had David Crockett, who wasn't that way, although he liked to drink. But we had David Crockett down here, and AWA had Larry Nelson. Those were two gems, I tell you that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And when and speaking of taking bumps before the camera hit, there's no doubt that Vince and Alfred did a few before, you know, when TNT would go to commercial, because that show, we're watching them now for our Excellent Network Adventure on the website, and you could tell that some of those are just utter shit shows. There's no doubt that something was going on.
I remember watching them live.
Yeah.
I remember watching them on USA. Yeah, I mean, those are funny shows, and I've watched almost all of them on the network, too, and it's a great nostalgia trip.
It really is, and you could tell that they're some of them, they were a goddamn mess. My favorite,
oh, yeah.
Chad, I think we got it coming up on ours, is the Butcher Vachon's wedding.
Oh, that's the ultimate.
Oh, yeah. That is the worst 90 minutes of crap I've ever watched in my life, to the point where it's like a car wreck. You can't avoid it.
Oh, it's amazing. Dr. D. David Schultz is king size in that whole deal.
He's awesome. He was so stone cold in that show. He was fantastic. Because if I had to – I'm starting to get my Justin hatred of Lou Albano, because he was all over that. And you want to talk about a guy that did a few bumps during the commercials. I think he did like a hill worth.
Well, Lou was more of a drinker. I don't know if he ever did the heavy drugs, but he was definitely a heavy – Heavy drinker.
Yeah, he definitely drank a lot. The bump guys were definitely – it had to have been Vince. Maybe not, but there was –
Oh, well, he was known for doing it. Yeah. No, Hogan was too.
There was one interview, I think it was Wyndham and Rotundo, and Rotundo, look, he was like sweating, and he was
– Oh, yeah.
He was a mess. That was a couple weeks before WrestleMania 1, but anyway, talking more about territory guys with drugs. Nah. Let's talk about Vince and – What do you think, Chris, if he – and Chad, I want your input on this. Do you think what he did was the right thing for the business? Now, I'm specifically interested in your guys' takes because you grew up in an era where it was a lot of territory. See, I grew up where the mothership was. I mean, the Titan Towers was 40 minutes from my house. But you guys grew up where there were territories all over the place, and then they all just like mushed together and vanished. Did he do the right thing for wrestling? Chad, I'll start with you.
I think that's a very nuanced answer. I think what he did was inevitable, mm-hmm. that eventually with the growth of cable and kind of the world getting smaller technological-wise, it was kind of inevitable that somebody was going to kind of conglomerate and combine a lot of different areas. For me personally, there's not many points in time where I call WWF my favorite promotion going on.
Right.
Like back in history, even now as a fan, like watching back, I mean, in the Monday Night Wars, I was an impassioned WCW fan, probably too late. I mean, I was hanging on till 2000. Still holding out hope, so I hung around pretty late in the game when it was even – there wasn't essentially a war even more. But just beyond that, I've kind of always looked for an alternative or something that speaks to me, what I desire as a wrestling fan more. But, I mean, I think Vince, there's certainly a lot of good but a lot of bad that he's done. But overall, I don't know if anybody else would have had the warts or not.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what do you think, Chris? I mean, would Fritz Von Erich eventually done it?
One war, it wouldn't have been any different. There'd have been some warts there as well.
Right, right. Do you think, I mean, who else would have had the wherewithal to do it? Chris, what do you
think?
If not, do you think Vern? Vern just seems so archaic, and he always broke.
He had the infrastructure, though. He had Chicago. He had San Francisco. Look at your major media markets. Vince had New York and Los Angeles. Vern had Chicago, San Francisco. There's top four right there. Of course, Prince had Dallas. Bosch had Houston. Mm-hmm. So there's your major media markets. And then Philadelphia comes in. There's no one for Vince. So that's three of the top markets right there, plus in Washington, D.C. as well.
Right.
So Vince had all the major media markets in his back pocket that he needed, most of them that he needed. So he had the infrastructure there to do it. His dad was such a powerful player in the business and friends with all the promoters,
mm-hmm.
that they were able to pull the wool over their eyes and, you know, ingratiate themselves to the promotions and to the wrestlers. You know, one thing that's on YouTube right now, and I suggest people go watch it, is my buddy Richard Land on his channel has about an hour and a half long videos of all American wrestling matches from 83, which is from other promotions, with Vince doing the wraparounds.
Right.
And it's AWA, mainly AWA Mid-South World Class in Florida. And, I mean, it's crazy to watch it today. And this is in 83, so you could tell what's going on, that Vince is showing the footage here of these guys because he's getting ready to take over. You know, he's getting these guys out there, so he's getting them exposure to a national audience. And you see Hogan, you see JYD, you see the Von Erichs, who he wanted in the worst way. Never could get him. But you could see where he was, where he was going with that. He was spotlighting them, and he was using the excuse, well, you know, I have this national show, and we're all cool, so I'm just going to spotlight your talent on my show to help you out. Well, yeah, he was helping him out all right. But, I mean, it was going to happen anyway. I mean, there was tried before. I know that, in fact, with Georgia, you know, Jack and Jerry Briscoe were wanting to do it in, out of Georgia, wanting to use Atlanta television because they had the television that Vince really didn't have. The weekly national cable television like that. And they wanted to expand out, but other stockholders didn't want to do it, like Fred Ward and Ole Anderson. They didn't want to do that. So that's one of the main reasons why the Briscoes sold out the Vince. You know, Jim Barnett was already there after Ole fired him, which is a big mistake.
Right.
So, I mean, they all sold out the Vince. And when Vince took over Atlanta, I mean, that's the big blow right there. When he got TBS, I mean, that was a huge blow to the NWA. And like I said, the promoters, you know, they tried to work together at different times, Pro Wrestling USA, and they tried to form up together, but they couldn't do it because they couldn't trust each other. And it was a mess. Now, if Watts had gotten TBS in 85 instead of Crockett.
Right.
Then that's a different story because, you know, one thing about Crockett, great television, great talent roster, but their markets were Charlotte, Raleigh, Durham, you know, Richmond, Norfolk. They're not high power markets. Watts had Houston, New Orleans, you know, you go to Atlanta, that's three big markets right there to play with. And, you know, he had his own great roster. So, yeah, that's the big what if about what would happen, but it was going to happen anyway. So Vince was just the smartest one to get to do it.
Mm. Chad, do you agree with Chris about Vern, or do you think maybe there was somebody else that if Vince hadn't done it, who else do you think had the wherewithal that could have done it?
Well, I think with Vern, you could see his reach, which was pretty surprising. Like all the, quite frankly, kind of weird areas AWA was going into with Winnipeg and Salt Lake City, and then migrating out west, Las Vegas,
Omaha. He was
right.
In Omaha,
Denver.
Yeah, Denver. Yeah.
So they were certainly trying to create a reach, and had probably. I mean, I guess geographically, they had the second biggest reach besides WWF, correct? Up till really, but what about 87 or so? Even UWF was still at their height. They were still like Oklahoma, East Texas, Louisiana, that type.
Right.
So, it seemed like it. I mean, it was something I think everybody sort of knew was going to happen. It was just a matter of who had the resources and ability to do it. And Vince was kind of the guy to do that.
I feel like Fritz could have done it. His problem was all his kids were dying.
He didn't want the problem with Fritz was he didn't want to leave Texas, and they wanted to expand that nationwide. The people that was in control,
right?
Whoever the bookers were, Kim Mantell, Gary Hart, whatever, they wanted to expand up. Fritz didn't want to leave Texas. He didn't want to leave Dallas.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Gary Hart, and I just watched the World Class the other day. I have both copies. I have the WWF one, and then there's that indie one that came out right around the same time. It was shortly before Gary Hart passed away. There was an interesting trust issue there in Dallas because some people weren't trusting Mantell. And that's why they wanted to bring Gary Hart back. Gary Hart didn't get like Christmas pay or something for like the 84 Star Wars or something, but he came back. There seemed to be some trust issues, no doubt.
Well, deservedly so. Kim Mantell, he left Fritz high and dry a year later with the watch. He took half the roster with him.
Yep. Yep. You think Jerry Jarrett could have done it?
No. No way.
Too small.
He wasn't paying. Yeah. Well. Yeah. And he wasn't paying his guys. I mean, they were getting a very small payoff. So if you weren't Lawler or Dundee,
that's why
or
I always pick. I always pick fights with Will. Joking, of course, because he hates Triple H and he likes every time he's on a show. He goes, Chad knows every time he's on a show and he says, "Sorry, Scott." I said, "Hey, I'm not the one whose favorite guy was the 57 time CWA heavyweight champion or whatever." You know, talk about stat padding. But you know, Will, I love Will to death, but we always josh about that. It seemed like Vern really probably was the best choice just based on geography. Like, you make a great point, Chris. I mean, based on geography, Vern was the best. But he just seems so lost. I mean, I watch the documentary the other day again. I watch it every few months because it makes me laugh, some of the things even Greg says. And I can't believe it just seemed. Plus, we just watched Super Sunday, which was on the network, and we got it for the adventure. And I know Chad, you watched it. How do you not call an audible and just have Hogan win the belt?
Well, there's the story behind that is that Byrne wanted to control Hogan's Japanese bookings.
Yeah, he wanted his Japanese money, and he wanted 5% of the T-shirts. In other words, he flipped Hogan off and being it. He wanted Hogan to be an indentured servant in essence.
Yeah.
He was
that's why Hogan didn't get the title.
Yeah, he wanted to be like a booker in the 70s. That's why I think it never would have happened even there. I don't think Vern ever got it. You know,
well, I think the move, if you really want to look at a move that should have been made, and it's not even AWA, and this move doesn't get talked about enough, is in 83, Hogan was working a lot in St. Louis, and he had a NWA World Heavyweight Title match race there. I know they had the big deal with really? Race and Flair, and they're building for Starrcade.
Jesus, when did that happen?
In 83, yeah.
Really?
So you have Hogan. I mean, if you look at it in retrospect, you know, and this was Bob Geigel and all that crew. Oh,
yeah, that bunch.
I mean, you put the NWA title on Hogan.
Holy shit.
And, you know, and that changes everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the date on that card. But, yeah, it was...
Well, Flair had won it in 81, and then he had just lost it that June in St. Louis to Harley. Yeah.
June. Okay, 10th. October 8th, 83. That's the match at the Keel. Harley Race beat Hogan by DQ.
So what would have happened? I mean, now that's fascinating. You just opened a whole new, like, Pandora's box here, because you talk about October 8th.
Yeah, and Starcade, 3 months before he won.
Right.
Yeah, and it's a month and a half before Starcade.
Yeah, 6 weeks before Starcade.
Which Hogan, there was always rumors going around that Hogan was on the original Starcade lineup.
That would have been ridiculous.
Him teaming with Wahoo against Slater and Norton.
Really? Wow. Could you imagine? That's crazy. Yeah. And you could catch all this on Between the Sheets. Yeah, I mean, this is crazy. Could you imagine? I had no idea that he did Midwest bookings. I mean, I know he went to Japan a lot. He went to All Japan, right? He worked for
New Japan.
Inoki.
New Japan. Japan.
He worked for Baba. Okay.
Yeah, Hogan worked a lot in St. Louis in that era. Vern had a piece of the office. So Hogan was able to work in St. Louis. You know, between AWA days, because AWA really didn't run a lot on Fridays.
Right.
And plus, they were in a promotional war then, too, against Larry Matisic. So they were loading up the cards. Like, I mean, did the Bruiser Hogan and Ron Ritchie over Blackjack Mulligan, Crusher Blackwell, and Baron Von Raschke. Here's Hogan over Blackwell by count out. Hogan beating Blackwell again.
How could anybody like that guy?
Oh, Blackwell was awesome. Don't slight Blackwell. But race over Hogan by DQ. Hogan and Blackwell in a steel cage match. On October 21st. So, yeah, Hogan was working throughout, you know, the summer in St. Louis for those, you know, Friday night deals that they did. It was, you know, they ran monthly shows, so it was just easy to go in and out.
Like, I think the crowd, that Super Sunday show is funny, because I think the crowd, you might disagree with me on this, Chris, and that's fine, but I thought that, because the main event was Blackwell and Al Casey against Vern and Mad Dog Vachon, which ended up actually being the last match.
Because it was built. It was the true main event of the show by television.
Right.
That's what they built. That was the main match.
Yeah. I mean, the writing was on the wall, I suppose, for Hogan that if his match wasn't last, he wasn't going to win. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know. In hindsight, was that a mistake, Chad?
Well, I kind of wrote this in our piece, too. I mean, I think if Hogan doesn't become Hogan, I mean, it looks worse now, obviously. Because it's like you had a golden opportunity to kind of build behind the guy that we all know became one of the biggest names in the business, and he didn't.
Right.
As I wrote in the piece, I mean, if Hogan becomes like David Sammartino, I don't think we kind of look back on this and right. say, oh, you know what I mean? But I certainly think like the refusal to go with him as champion, as the hot hand, was a mistake in the end. But it's kind of weird because I think it's tough to separate your views now from what was happening at the time, because if you look at attendance after Hogan left, everybody knows Dylan Hales has done a lot of attendance stuff with AWA, and kind of one of the most alarming things to me when he looked at that was that attendance actually went up a good bit in some markets when Hogan left the AWA, which is kind of surprising.
Heenan was a bigger blow than Hogan. Heenan was a bigger blow leaving than Hogan was.
There's no doubt. I agree with that to a certain extent.
And Blackwell was drawing big numbers on top for a while.
Yeah.
It's our babyface guy.
See his stuff as a member of the Sheiks, and it was I guess once I watched all the stuff for the 80s project, it didn't feel – I guess a substantial a blow. I still think that finish in a micro sense is terrible and didn't do anybody any favors. And they probably should have went with Hogan. But I think just watching that show just in a vacuum, it kind of amplifies everything. Mm.
You know,
they should have gave Hogan the belt, but they could have a chance to take it off of him, you know, even when they needed to.
Right. Yeah. You know, what fascinated me about that Super Sunday? I didn't realize that Wendy Richter was a heel when her and Joyce Grable were working together. They were fantastic.
Yeah, she was a heel for her whole early career.
The two of them were great. I'm not a Velvet McIntyre.
In fact, you know, before she went to WF, she was working heel in Mid-South. She was once aligned with Jim Cornette, the Midnight Express, helping them out, and she was a tagging on Buddy Landell.
Huh.
On shows. Yeah. This is like weeks before going to WWF.
Yeah. They definitely need to add some more of this stuff onto the network. I mean, there's what, like 8 Mid-Souths? They've got to beef that up.
Hopefully it's coming. You know, the fact they've added these AWA shows out of nowhere, you know, that's a good thing.
Yeah. I think what I've noticed, and you'll notice it because I know I'm a little bit ahead of you guys, Chad, with our list, but you're going to notice that 90% of the 90% of the territory stuff that they've added is because Sean is on. The Mid-Souths, Sean's on. AWA, Sean's on. I just find it funny. That's pretty much the reason why, except for that.
Yeah,
Sunday.
When they added that stuff, you know, like the Smoky Mountain stuff with Jericho.
Right. The Thrill Seekers, right.
So yep, there's a reason why that stuff was added. And the But the USWA global stuff is mainly for Austin.
Yep, and Booker probably, right? Harlem Heat is probably in that too.
I don't know if Booker's even on. No.
Yeah, because the stuff they label as global is actually.
Oh, okay.
Some of that stuff is like 1990 USWA when they were running Dallas and Memphis parallel.
Oh, okay, so it's a little early.
Yeah, there's no actual global proper on there. It's all best of USWA.
I see. I haven't really.
Yeah, but I mean, they could do. I mean, AWA, they get, you know, Mr. Perfect. If they want to do a deep dive on Kurt Hennig, they certainly have.
I loved Hennig in. I loved Hennig in WWE.
He's better than there than he was as Mr. Perfect, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
I think anybody that's watched both. I mean, the character Mr. Perfect is kind of iconic from my childhood, but just in ring, to me, it's not really even close.
Well, yeah, I think the issue there is the roster is just Vince's mid card in those first couple years were pretty horrendous. So I mean, Kurt didn't have a great cachet of guys. I mean, if anybody's never seen, I think I have it on tape. I think it was one of those. I know both of you have seen it, but if anybody has never seen that 1 hour draw him and Bockwinkel did, That thing is a fucking gem.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a gem. I think it was like New Year's Eve, right? Or like
I watched it live.
It aired then. It's from November 86.
Yeah, I watched it live.
I watched it live.
So did I, man. That match is friggin' incredible.
Yeah. That series overall is awesome. I mean, even their early matches up to when Henning wins the belt, I thought was a great payoff match.
Me too.
I actually like face Henning better than heel. So
really, mm-hmm. I have to say that one of my favorite heels, just because he was so damn good on the stick, and he worked well for a guy who wasn't, you know, AWA guys were never overly chiseled, but I don't think Nick Bockwinkel gets nearly enough credit for being one of the greatest heels in the history of this business.
He's one of the all-time greats, period.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. No doubt about it.
And the thing is, we don't have a lot of his stuff from the 70s, just stuff I was able to watch and see how awesome he was. Because that was when he was at his prime.
Yeah.
But he was still 53 years old and out there just having awesome matches.
Yep, I agree.
And regarding, you know, Kurt, have y'all watched Super Clash 2 yet?
Not for the series.
Not yet.
But you've seen the match,
I've
right?
Seen, yeah, yes. It was a long time.
All right, you know, on Between the Sheets, we just covered that last month. And the deal was where the finish, where they kind of was screwy around with the finish, where they took the belt from Henning, was because Henning had a standing offer with WWF right then and there, and they thought he was about to go. So they were going to give him the title. And then he turned the WWF down, and that's when they decided to give him the title right after that.
Huh.
Yep.
He could have
went in 86 and turned him down then, and then he could have went right then in 87, then he turned him down then he eventually went the year later.
I'm surprised Vince offered him another deal. Usually Vince.
He wanted him. He wanted to see, that's the thing. Vince was trying to kill all the AWA, especially trying to kill these territories by taking their top talent. So he would be, you know, Ted DiBiase is another one. He tried to get Ted DiBiase for three straight years before he finally jumped in 87.
Yep.
So, I mean, he's persistent in getting these guys to try to kill all territories off.
Yeah, and the big thing with DiBiase was by the time he left in 87, I mean, obviously, you know, Mid-South became UWF, but they had been bought by Crockett, so who knew if he was going to want to go to
He turned down more money from Crockett. Crockett offered him way more money than Vince did. He turned it down.
Hmm.
Yep.
What do you think of that?
I think he saw what was going to happen.
Yeah.
Right.
Long term.
He saw what they were going to do with the UWF.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that was one of the biggest botches in wrestling history.
That might even be worse. You know, it's funny you say that. We're going to go to break in a minute. But it's funny you say that too, Chris, because because a lot of people consider that like the 80s version of the Alliance. And Crockett just had every UWF guy lose, like buried all of them.
Pretty much.
You know, like Terry Taylor lost. And
well, he integrated the whole roster in and stuff like that. It wasn't anything special.
Yeah, they were just a bunch of guys. Yeah, I agree. Let's take a break. We have had a blast. Chris Zellner making his debut here on the main event. Chad Campbell came in. Thank you, Chad. We will talk Money in the Bank, I promise, for those that are waiting for it. Of course, it's this Sunday from the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. It'll be the first indoor Vegas pay-per-view not to be at the Thomas and Mack Center. Historically, Vegas pay-per-views, other than WrestleMania 9, are usually exemplary. We'll see if this one is exemplary. But more, I'm going to talk more history, man. Hell with this. More with Mr. Zellner and Mr. Campbell after this.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, Main Event, Mission Indie Possible, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free PlaceToBe Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the reaction shows with good old Will from Texas. We got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
AWA Championship Wrestling. The AWA presents the greatest stars in professional wrestling, bringing you the best in mat action.
And welcome back, Police to Be Nation, to the Main Event. Scott Criscolo with Chad Campbell and our special guest, Chris Zellner. From PWO, PlaceToBeNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. Speaking of, what a great segue we did here, Chad. Speaking of AWA Super Sunday, that is the most recent episode, or most recent, I guess, chapter, if you will, or entry, in PTBN's excellent WWE Network Adventure series. Chris, do you know what we're doing? Have you read it? Have you been able to read any of it?
Yeah, I'm following along, yeah.
Super, super. For those that are new to the site, welcome. What we're doing is myself, Mr. Rosero, Chad, Mr. Greenhouse, Mr. McGinn, we are watching everything, because we're just psychos, everything on the WWE Network in chronological order. We had to do a backtrack, because technically we're into like mid to late 84 right now, but because Super Sunday dumped, we did it, of course, April 24th, 1983. That is the top piece on PlaceToBeNation.com at the moment, so check out the comments of myself, Chad, JR, Greeny, and Dan. Overall, what do you think, Chad? Overall, we don't want to read the whole article. I want people to hop on and read it. But overall, I loved the show until the Hogan finish, and then I think I just got angry at that main event. I know that the feud was a big deal, Chris, and you're right. But just seeing Vern after knowing what he did to Hogan just made me hate that main event. Maybe I took it too personally, but overall, I love the show. I thought it was a great show. I thought it was booked. You know, the undercard wasn't bad. Dizzy Boulder, the great beefcake with that horrendous mullet. There was some great moments on that show overall. What do you think, Chad?
Yeah, I like the way the show built. I thought it built well, where you had kind of variety. You had Lawler and Tolos kind of doing a different style match. You had the women And then you had kind of the big main feature matches. So the card progressed well. I think the show is really strong. It just has one bad finish that, again, just looking at the show isolated, really kind of can cloud your judgment of the show overall. So I thought it was a good show overall.
I did think, though, like, I did think that there were some points of it where it seemed like you're trying to advance this roster and you're trying to, and, you know, you want to, but it seemed like there were a lot of old looking, like, I mean, Vern at that point was what, probably in his late 50s.
Yeah, Vern was in the twilight. John Tolos
old and bald. It seemed like there were a lot of old bald guys.
Well, that's the AWA. I mean, the AWA was known for having the older style of wrestler.
Yeah.
They had the Crusher hanging out.
Yeah. Blackjack Lanza was no spry chicken either.
No, he wasn't, no. And that six-man, I think, got hosed on time. I agree with, I think JR said that. That six-man with Bobby's guys against the High Flyers and...
It was clipped. Yeah, it was a clip.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Son of a... I got to have you on more often. I don't remember any of this stuff. I didn't know idea that was clipped. Because I'm surprised, because it's like... This match should be longer and better, and it was good, but it seemed neutered. Wow, I had no idea it was clipped.
Yeah,
it was clipped. They clipped stuff. Jesus Christ. NWA used to piss me off when they clipped them. Their videotapes were ridiculous. You couldn't hold a door open with them.
There's there's a High Flyers versus Strike Force. They weren't called that, but a Strike Force team tag match from, what was that, late fall 82? And it's
August
clipped, and it's a crackling match. We probably get about half of it, and the back half is just awesome.
Wow.
But that's the worst part about Winnipeg AWA stuff, is that when they would show, like, the Matt Classics, they were always halfway in, and these were always matches that looked hot, you know, and it make you think, if we had had those matches in full, the AWA set would have been a whole lot better as a set. But, yeah, I mean, there was a... It was a clip there for some reason.
That's crazy.
I don't know why.
That's crazy. Anyway, check it out. It's the top story right now on PlaceBeNation.com. The excellent WWE Network adventure, AWA Super Sunday from April 24th, 1983. Yes, the Hogan-Bachwinkle match. Glenn Butler has his Wednesday walk around the web. The T.J. McClune show has Eamon Payton. The JR's in my Vintage Vault refresh. The February 1st, 1993 episode of Monday Night Raw. Mr. Bayless has his Raw rundown from this past Monday. Lucha Undead. Hey, that's you.
Yeah.
Chad, tell us about the newest episode of...
Yeah, this is one of the newer additions to PTB and Pop, our new feed. And what Timothy and Adrian do on that show is they alternate. One week is kind of a... Brad's kind of called it a shoot interview with PTBN, but it's a little bit of a deeper dive. So on this particular show, we talk a little bit about the formation of Place to Be Nation, but also just in myself, some of my interest outside of wrestling. We ended up talking about Disney World. We ended up talking about jam band music. So we kind of took a lot of twists and turns. It's a little bit of a deeper introspective to some of the personalities at Place to Be Nation. So they're going to be dropping one of those shows every 2 weeks. And then on the other weeks, they're actually going to be doing a show where it's all around beer. And they sample usually five IPAs or specific type of beer. And
on the show?
Yeah, on the show. So it's a different...
Okay.
Again, something new for the PT... BN Pop feed. We did not have a beer podcast, so something I'm educated in, but not educated into, like, the new craft beer IPA scene that's really hot. I was telling them, like, for me, an adventurous beer to drink is something like Newcastle, so I'm pretty standard when it comes to that.
We've had multiple guests in between the sheets that were drunk, so
was Harris one of them?
No, Keith's just from England.
I know, but his accent is bitchin' thick, though. Holy crap.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he knows his stuff, and you've had him. I've listened to, I'm listening to that in chronological order, so I'm still on your ones from last October. Guy knows his stuff, but my God, his accent's thick.
Yeah, holy. I feel like he lost his exit from his first appearance to his second one. but I became a lot more. I don't know. My ear though with that has became more. I guess accustomed to it, just doing podcasts with Parr.
That is so funny. So check out the newest episode of Lucha Undead with Chadley. An epic. Speaking of podcasts, guys, a historical moment happened. In Place to Be, the Place to Be podcast, the Mothership, episode 409. The streak is over, Chad.
Yep.
The Cal Ripken Iron Man streak ended at 408 episodes. For the first time ever, I missed a Place to Be podcast. Everyone knows why, if you've been paying attention to the site, of course. I was involved in my Sword and Shield Charity Golf Classic on Monday, and I thank everyone who helped donate. We're going to do it again next year. So I actually was off, and JR sat solo and interviewed James Dixon, who, of course, was the Titan author, if you will, and talked about the newest episode, Titan Screwed, which was 1997. So check out the interview. I listened to it. It was fantastic. JR did a great job. And you, Mr. Zellner, pumped out the newest episode of Between the Sheets. Let's talk about the show itself first before we pimp the newest episode, because this is the one that I've been listening to religiously. I'm trying to catch up on all of the podcasts on the PWO feed. You and Mr. Bixenspan, and usually a guest, although one episode I just listened to, it was just the two of you. That must have been brutal, and that was like 4 hours. God bless you for that one. You didn't have a third voice. I can't believe you got through it. it was a great episode, though. I'm trying to remember which one that was. I think it was the 90. What was the one you two did alone?
We've done a few lately.
Yeah, they're becoming more frequent. I can't remember what the first one
the
was.
The first one was, I'm looking it up now. I'm up to like episode 11, I think.
Yeah, I know it was right around my episode, so yeah. Probably October-ish.
Anyway, for those that haven't listened yet, please do. Between the Sheets, the guys, Dave and Chris, the week that they're recording, or the week that they release the episode, they go back in time to that same week at another year in wrestling history, which I think is an incredibly awesome concept. So I know the one the last one is, you know what, Chad, I think the one, I'm a couple away from you. Here it is. The first one, the last one I listened to was episode 12, which was, and what a week, because it was the Brian Pillman week, October 6th through the 12th, 1997.
Yeah, that's right.
That episode, that episode, Chris, was fantastic.
I think the reason why me and Bix did alone, right?
Yes.
The reason why, most times if we're alone, it's because the show is so big. A couple of times it's happened because our guests had to cancel the last minute, but, yeah, that show was so much in that show that we just decided to just do it ourselves.
It was an excellent show. First of all, I highly recommend listening to all of them. I'm up to the next one. I'm going to listen to. You had Bruce Mitchell on,
right? For the first half, Magnum PA.
Yep. It was October 13th through the 19th, 1986, which was a rough week in wrestling. As Chad mentioned, that was the car accident of Magnum TA, who was probably going to win the world title at Starrcade '86. Let's not kid ourselves.
Well, not so fast. We tell that story on the show. So I won't tell you what happened. Just listen to the show and you'll hear what the real story was for Starrcade '86.
Episode 13. But you guys, of course, are up now to episode, 47, I think you're up to now.
Yeah, I just did the notes for 48 right before we started this show.
So tell us about, let's see. So this coming week, it is you. Oh, you're guest list again. But this is another big week. It's speaking of, it's the same
27 pages of notes. That's why we had no guests.
You guys. June 7th through the 13th, 1997. That was the infamous Sean Brett fist fight at a Raw I was at up in Hartford. And I think that was and Kevin Nash, Roddy Piper, a little.
In Boston. Yeah, right up the road.
Yeah, so a great week. So that's the newest episode, episode 47. Of Between the Sheets, you and Bix talking June 7th through the 13th, 1997. So
Lawler at the ECW Arena debuting there.
That's right, yeah.
Just a lot of stuff going on that week, yeah.
27 pages of notes. questions. I want to talk about your boy Bix for a minute. David Bixen's man, folks. Follow him on Twitter. Your co-host. He's like, what, 12?
Bix has seemed like 12 forever, but actually, I mean, Bix is one that, when I first started getting into the internet wrestling message board scene, Bix was one of the first guys that I really started talking to.
Uh-huh.
And he would have been 14, 15 back then. So, yeah, Bix is like 31, 32 now.
Wow. Yeah, he's right at a year younger than me.
Yeah,
or older than me.
He's a grizzled veteran in the game now.
Let me tell you something. That guy knows his stuff. I mean, it's one thing to know just wrestling like we do, you know, angles and, you know, some backstage stuff. That guy knows, you know, TV program directors of TV stations and, you know, cops that have arrested wrestler. I mean, that guy knows, like, everything. I mean, he's like a sponge. I mean,
he's a great writer, too, for many, many sites. And, yeah, this is his life. I mean, he does, that's what he does. He does podcasts, he does art, writes articles and watches wrestling. This is his life deal. So, he put all his effort into it. Me, I got a 40-hour week job. So I got to juggle real life work and, you know, all of this stuff too. But he, you know, wrestling and MMA is his deal. That's his full-time deal. So, hey, you know, I props to him.
God bless him. I mean, he knows his stuff. When he's like, I could just like his voice, like, hey, Chris, what about that guy that?
That's not a bad impersonation.
The guy
that's pretty good.
Isn't that the program director in St. Louis? Bob something or other. And I'm like, how the fuck does he know this? It's like ridiculous. I mean, I know angles, wrestlers, and pay per views, and I'm kind of a nerd about cities and states, but. Program directors. The only one I know is that what's his name, Jim Herd, that dope. He's the only TV station executive guy that I know in wrestling. This guy,
he's been into the business part of wrestling for many years. Yeah. So he's read so much and wrote so much about it. That's how he knows everything. And,
yeah, no, and I'm making light of it.
Bix is something else.
No, he's fantastic. I'm joking. When I kid around like that, that means I like them. But listen to Between the Sheets. Chris and Dave do a fantastic job. And episode 47 is up now on PlaceBeNation.com, as is the whole back catalog. Like I said, the problem is, Chris, it takes me 3 days to listen to your show.
The one thing is at least they're time stamped. So
yes.
And that's a way. And they're evergreen. So
evergreen,
you can always go back and listen to it. It's not, you don't have to listen to it as soon as it comes out, although I prefer you would.
Well, of course.
But, you know, if you can listen to it anytime you want, and it's evergreen. And I know a buddy of mine at PWO, Trev, is doing a chronological listing of it right now. So if you want to, you can listen to it in chronological order if you just go by its chart. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's so many years. We could do this podcast for many, many years.
Oh, yeah. There's plenty more for you guys to delve into.
Yeah.
Now, give everyone a little idea. I haven't had a chance to listen to this yet because I'm a OCD and I have to listen to one show all in a row. So, tell us a little bit about Exile on Bad Street and what that is.
Exile on Bad Street is the OG podcast of my podcast that I do. It's the one that I had the idea for first. You know, doing the reaction shows, I did enough of them where I felt comfortable in being able to do my own stuff. You know, now I had to, you know, go through that and doing guest shots and other shows and stuff like that. So I got to a point where I'm ready to start hosting, and I got what I needed to get, you know, the recorder and all that stuff. And I had ideas floating in my head. This is what I would want to listen to. And I decided, well, let's knock it out. And of course, the first one was going to be anyway, no matter what, a profile on the Freebirds. So that was the first show when it's me and Will and Pete from This Week in Wrestling, also on PWO Network. And it just grew from there. You know, me, Dylan, and Bix did the death of UWF and death of Crockett as two of the early shows too. And those were two of the best received shows I've ever done. And they were like the second and fourth podcast I ever did as a host. Hmm. And those shows are fantastic. If you've never heard them, go back and listen to them. You know, I'm still learning to do it, but we had so much great stuff to talk about. And it's just, again, it's stuff that's not talked about like it should be today. And you're going back and doing the research in the Observer and the Torches and whatever to get information like that. So those shows, I love doing those shows. And also, you know, the old Exiles too. I tried to do different things, you know, different subjects, talking about one of my favorite series I did was with me, Wes Hatch, and Rob Naylor, mm-hmm. talking about 2001 through 2004 U.S. independent wrestling. And it was just basically us just talking. I mean, there's no notes, no nothing. It's just us talking. You know, I was throwing out names and telling stories and stuff like that. And, you know, the second show we did got Rob in a lot of trouble with people because of the stories he was telling about WWE personnel, such as Baron Corbin, which earned him he named him Football Tom. And that became like a running joke on Twitter and other stuff like that, too. So, yeah, I try to get my friends as guests and people I would think would be good guests, do shows. You know, I did one. I mean, to show you how different stuff is, you know, I did one on crowd reactions with Joe Lanza and Rob Behar, where we just talked about, you know, the different crowds and different scenes and what we prefer and what we didn't like. I did the show talking about Bob Backlund as WF champion with Parv and Graham Coffin from History of WWE.
Yep.
Just all these, I'm doing all these different shows, and now I've basically been doing a running theme. I did two running themes. I did the History of Smoky Mountain Wrestling with Dylan Hales and Tim Knoll, which I did those shows, and I transitioned from there to now doing the History of Continental Championship Wrestling with Bo James, and Carl Stern did one show with us. And we just did part four, which should be up a couple of days after this show will be up, hopefully be up by the weekend. And we're going to be one more show to go. And those shows have been amazing because that's a promotion that I grew up loving to watch on television, on Channel 36, on Joe Pedicino's block and stuff like that.
Right.
And Bo lived it because he lived in the Tri-Cities and he was able to go to Knoxville and go to those shows. And then eventually worked for the promotion, selling tickets and doing odd jobs as a 16-year-old kid, then promoted spot shows as a 16-year-old kid, which we'll talk about in the next show, the final show. So, I mean, you hear so much of these stories, and he's got just great, great stuff, information that nobody has known about, nobody talks about. And, yeah, that's what I want to do. I want to bring out stuff that, you know, we all could talk about WWF, WCW, ECW till we're blue in the face. You know, that's stuff that's been talked, everybody talks about it. But I like to bring out the stuff that doesn't get talked about enough.
Definitely.
And I like. So
definitely.
That's why I like doing that show.
Good. Oh, excellent. So definitely check it out. Definitely check it out. And I can't talk enough about Between the Sheets. What a fantastic show. The next one I think on my listening. My favorite so far, I mean, I love them all. But one I particularly enjoyed was the one you did with Will, September 22nd to the 28th, 1984. That was a great one.
Well, see, with that show, the Observer in that era was not really news. I mean, it was some a little bit, but there's so much that was going on as far as like promotion and stuff like that. That was a show we could talk about just wrestlers and stuff like that and what angles that was going on at the time.
Right.
So that's what that show was about then. And those shows are easy to do. You know, it's not 27 pages of notes, but that I think that one was like 8 or 9.
That's crazy.
So, I mean, I love doing that show too. The one thing that we've added to the Between the Sheets shows is sounds and drops, although some people don't like that, and that's their, you know, prerogative, whatever, but we do stuff that we like to do, and yeah, I mean, we try to keep it different, try to add stuff to the show, and you know, not make it monotonous. So yeah, we try to always find new guests. In fact, we have a new guest on the next show that I guess I'll talk about later, I guess, when we do plugs. But
we'll do plugs later.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, and try to keep it fresh, and we're coming up on a year anniversary.
Yeah,
in a month. Yeah. So we're trying to do a best of show. So,
well, that'd be terrific.
Yeah, we're trying to get people's info and what segments they liked and what clips they wanted to hear, and we'll try to put together a best of show.
Yep, Oh, that's awesome.
You're about to come up on, I think, what probably would still be my favorite episode, Scott, so far, is the one with Dr. Lucha talking about the When Worlds Collide pay-per-view. There was so much like insight just in that section. It was incredible.
That's episode 16, Dr. Lucha, Steve Sims, November 3rd of the 9th, 1984.
Yeah. And see, and when we do shows like that, if we can get a guest that was there or a guest that was on the scene at the time that has that you know, historical perspective, then that's what we try to go for. It's like when we had Pete Lederberg on talking the week that Lawler, they did the Lawler and Rich and Gilbert angle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was there on set. I mean, he was on him and his, I can't remember the other guy. They were giving out the WFIA award to Eddie Gilbert and Tommy Rich. So he was actually on there. And then, you know, he tells the story of how that came together and his, you know, he had a close relationship with Eddie Gilbert. So we get that, you know, the stories behind that. So, yeah, we try to get people on that has a perspective about it. Right. And you know, I know you're talking about y'all's favorites. I think my favorite podcast I've done so far, and this is mainly because it's a selfish one for me, because it was just a great show to do because it was my childhood. And Chad will probably know this because he was in the building when I did this, but I went and Scott Hudson and Steve Prazak was at a Wrestling America show in Barnesville, my hometown. And I went and personally invited them to do Exile. You know, told myself, we're just going to talk about, you know, you guys' background stuff. The only time I've ever personally invited somebody to do a show.
Hmm.
And they did the show, and it was just us talking about Georgia independent wrestling from the 90s and global and stuff like that. And I love that show to death because it was just awesome to have them two together. And they're so great.
Hmm.
So great together. Great, they're a great comedy act, playing off each other. Talking about Uncle Sammy Kent, who's a legend. And just all this great stuff, and I love that show to death. So if you never listened to that episode of Exile, which it was done in February,
early February,
go check that one out.
Definitely,
it kind of bridges that one bridges the Smoky Mountain and the Continental series.
Yes, there you go. There you go.
Fantastic. Yeah, we had I enjoyed having when Justin and I had Scott Hudson on. He was really funny. He was very very fun.
Oh, Scott's
to have
awesome.
On. Yeah,
awesome.
No, he's awesome. We had him on.
He was awesome, too.
Yeah, he was great. So, anyway, check out all the great shows on the PWO feed for those that are unfamiliar with it. And I'm just glowing of Between the Sheets. That's the one I've listened to the most. This October 20th through 26th, 1990. Who's this scrub?
Oh, that Chad grief. Campbell guy?
Yeah, who's he? Yeah. Oh, God. I'm sure Bix had to carry him. No.
Well, Chad, I'm going to kiss Chad's ass a little bit. Chad's a good guest to have on because Chad has watched so much of the 90s stuff for the 90s project on Pro Wrestling Only that it's easy to have him on because he's seen this stuff. So he could talk about the matches themselves and stuff like that and angles or whatever. So he's seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. He's an easy guest to have on the show.
No, he is. That's why he's on now. Yeah. So there it is. PlacementNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. Check out all of our podcast feeds. Go to Amazon through placementnation.com if you're buying stuff for the summertime or what have you. Any isn't Game of Thrones most recent season? I know they're in the middle of one now, but I saw it in Walmart today. Anyway, anything you want to get on Amazon, go through us. We get a little taste, help us run the site. You'll see on the site, on the side of the page, you'll see PlacementNation publications. If you click on that, you'll see three ebooks that my PIC, Mr. Rosero, and I have authored. Vintage Vault Refreshes, Volumes 1 through 3. Volume 1, The Federation Years. It's all the pay-per-views between WrestleMania 1 and Survivor Series 1992. Volume 2 is all of the Saturday night's main events from the original run, so from May 11th of 1985 through, let's see if I can remember the date, November 14th. I think it was 1992. Of course, the last one when Shawn won his first Intercontinental title. And then Volume 3 is the Place to Be Nation Vintage Vault Refresh Volume 3, the New Generation Era. And that is the pay-per-views from the 1993 Royal Rumble through WrestleMania 12. So check out all three of those. completely free. And in fact, for quite a while, and I believe it still is, it's in the top five still, but the Federation Years ebook was number one on Amazon's pop culture download list for quite a while. So we're very proud of that. So check it out. It's on the right on the side of the site there. PlaceToBeNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. We went to break. We were talking about Super Sunday and AWA. I wonder if fans in St. Paul would cheer Roman Reigns. I don't know. Probably would have thought his hair was too long. But he is your WWE World Heavyweight Champion. And this Sunday, he'll be defending the title. Let's finally talk about Money in the Bank. This Sunday from the T-Mobile Arena in Vegas, or actually technically it's Paradise, Nevada. A burb. It's kind of like when everyone says that December to Dismember was in Atlanta when it was really in Augusta. I can't believe that.
Which I don't know how they get that mixed up because Augusta is quite a piece away from Atlanta.
I know. I know.
I guess Armageddon 2004, I guess they would have said that was Atlanta. But, you know, it's really in
Gwinnett, right?
Yeah, and Duluth,
right.
Well, that's more of a deal there because it's, you know.
That's kind of the same vibe as this because it's, 25 minutes or so from the metropolitan area.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Let us go to Vegas. And let's see, we've got not one, but we have two pre-show matches. Two pre-show matches. Ugh. The first one is the third straight pre-show match between Dolph Ziggler and Baron Corbin. Three in a row.
That's amazing.
Why not just fire them? Three in a row, or at least fire Dolph Ziggler. I don't know. Baron Corbin won the first two. Of course, he won the Battle Royal at WrestleMania.
He lost. He lost on Payback.
Oh, that's right. He did lose a Payback. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, they're 1-1. This is the rubber match.
The rubber match.
A pre-show, but not counting their TV matches, but this is a rubber match of pre-show matches.
What do you think? You're calling this one, Chris.
Corbin has to win. If he doesn't win, it's complete bullshit. Yeah. I mean, he's the guy that needs to win. This should have been over with last month. That it just feels like they're just treading water right now until the brand split with guys like this. So he's got to win it.
Chad, you agree?
Yeah, ditto with that. I will say with Ziggler, I mean, sometimes it's tough to remember. It was only about a year and a half ago when he won that Survivor Series match.
Oh, yeah, when Sting
in 2014 when Sting debuted.
Yeah.
And, I mean, people were talking about, oh, this is the guy to lead the company if Daniel Bryan's injured or whatever.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I mean, think about that. That's been 18 months ago. I don't know if anybody's stock has fallen harder in 18 months than his.
Yeah.
Just in the eyes of kind of our wrestling sphere.
Yeah. I agree. I think Corbin has to win this match, and I think he will, too. The other pre-show match is Sheamus, who has fallen far from the Money in the Bank.
Yeah. Another one.
Another one, taking on Mr. Apollo Crews, who I actually liked in NXT. I thought he was a good character. But I guess it's time to start pushing this guy. I'm assuming, Chad, he has to win this one.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's the pre-show, so... Yeah, usually good for a face victory on the pre-show. Apollo Crews is kind of an interesting guy. Even through his run as U-Haw Nation, mostly I watched him in Dragon Gate a good bit. And he's someone that has the tools. I mean, you can see it. He has charisma, has a great look. But I still don't think he's ever been able to put it all together. And maybe he will at one point and just kind of take off because I think he has the potential to if he can wind it all together. But he's not there. I mean, he still has time to develop, and I'm interested to see where he's going. So I haven't, quit on him. But even through NXT and now on the main roster, I just feel like there's something that's kind of missing for me. Just a little tinge that's not captivating me.
What do you think, KZ?
I agree. I mean, he's got what it takes, but he doesn't have that spark. And regarding Sheamus, it's interesting to watch him because, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is out and they were already making a really big deal about that. I made this statement on Twitter Monday that he's basically in the stage of the top guy in the Paul Jones army stage of his career right now, right, where he's in these feuds with like guys like Jimmy Valiant or something like that. So,
Did you tweet that? I thought I saw you say
that. Yeah, that was me.
You tweeted that. That's right. That's right. So I remember. That was great.
So I think he has to lose. I really do. I mean, it makes no sense to job Apollo right now, but knowing then they'll probably do it, or it could go to a non-finish to set up another match.
Right.
So I think Apollo wins or non-finish, one of the two, but I don't think he loses points.
Incidentally, guys, since I can't believe both of you probably care, or maybe you don't, I think Freddie Freeman is a single away from the cycle.
Oh.
So, in case you're...
He's had a hell of a night tonight as we've recorded this show.
A rare bit of good Braves news.
Yeah.
It's about time because he struggled all year.
I know. Thought he was trade bait, but I don't think they'll trade him.
They're not trade. They've already said it. Yeah, they have him as protect. Julio Teheran would be probably the... individual they'll be throwing out there to see what they can get.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the show proper. We'll begin with a tag team match I'm actually sick and strangely looking forward to. Charlotte, your women's champion, and Dana Brooke, her Arn Anderson, taking on Natalya and my favorite, Miss Becky Lynch. What do you think here, Chris?
This is interesting because... I tell you what, the women's division, if you look at it past Mania, man, this went downhill as far as everything goes. I mean, I know Sasha's had her injury issues, but the angles they've done have been, not that great. I mean, the Ric Flair stuff was, I don't know about that, but. Charlotte, I will say this, Charlotte has gotten better as a heel character. But the deal with Dana Brooke, of course, with Emma being injured, Dana Brooke transitions over to Charlotte. And you knew they were going to tease something there between them, but God, they went like maybe 3 months too early with it. They're already teasing the dissension already. It's like, geez, they just put them together. So it seems like they're rushing that along. Natalya is solid, but she's... Her time has come and gone. Becky, God, I love Becky too. Becky's one of my favorites.
Oh, I love
and,
Becky.
She's in a spot where I think this is as far as she's going to go at this level, sadly, as of right now. But I don't know. This match should be interesting because, I mean, they can have a good match, but I don't know. It all depends on how much. I mean, Dana in the ring is not there yet. She is definitely there as a character.
Mm-hmm.
She has that, but she's not there as a worker yet. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting, but I think that Charlotte and Dana will win the match in the end.
Chad?
Yeah, this has been kind of a weird ride because when they paired Charlotte with Natalya, to me, it felt like, okay, here's kind of a small feud for her to do something until I think the expectation was it'd be the big Sasha Banks match at SummerSlam. But now we're 3 months of this. We've got the dissension between her and Dana Brooke and that the Flair thing, like Chris said, it was just odd. Rick, I thought actually added to me. I know some people have not liked him in that managerial role, but I did like him there. In that role, so him being gone is kind of lost a little bit for me. Looking at the match overall, I mean, it's a tag match, so you could from one side say, well, this is a way for Charlotte to take a pin without losing the belt in kind of a high-profile place, but, I mean, she just lost to Paige on a Raw. So, I don't know. I think at this point with how they view Natalya and sadly Becky, because I think Becky is really the true kind of casualty of what's going on right now, because whether they're justified in their kind of grievances of how injury prone Sasha Banks is or isn't, you have someone in Becky Lynch that personifies kind of that young, you know, Divas Revolution or whatever, that motif that they're going for. And she's right there, and she can work, and she has the personality too. And they just sort of destined her to maybe be kind of a bit challenger, or, and really in a lot of ways too, a pretty dumb character on screen. So it's kind of sad what's going on there. So I guess at the end of the day, I'm going to pick Charlotte and Dana too, but I don't feel too confident about that. And I really hope they kind of get on track, because going into Mania, that was, to me, one of the few highlights of WrestleMania was that triple threat. And I think they've done enough to where when Charlotte does lose the belt, it will be a big moment. I just hope they do the kind of can get into an angle with the right person to where it kind of justifies that title switch. I don't know if Dana Brooke is that person right now.
Right. Okay. I like Charlotte and Dana here. I think Natalya eats the pin because it's what she does best. First title match we'll talk about, the United States Championship on the line. Rusev taking on Titus O'Neil. I think this is some type of holdover feud for Rusev to kind of rebuild him, find him a better opponent. Maybe Sami Zayn, if he doesn't go for if he doesn't go for one secondary belt, he'll go for the other. Chad?
Yeah, I'm kind of excited about this. Hopefully they give just, you know, 8 to 10 minutes, have a good Hoss fight. It can kind of be along the lines of the Big E Rusev matches, which I adored. So, you know, just have a nice little big guy match. Rusev's going to come out on top, move on to something else.
Yeah. KZ?
To give the time, that's what I think. You know, Titus can work, and Rusev, you know, do we know how good he is? I mean, they just got to give him the time. And the way they built it up on television, though, is it's, they letting you think that there's a chance that Titus may beat Rusev. You know, normally if you look at Wrestling Logic, when the whoever looks the best going into the pay-per-view is who's going to lose. But I just don't see it happening. So I think Rusev retains, and then we'll see what happens after that.
Yes, I believe Rusev will retain the title here. Fatal four-way for the Tag Team Championship. I think this is one of the more predictable matches, my personal opinion. New Day defends a title against The Club, Amore and Big Enzo and Big Cass, and the Vaudevillains. I think this is where you get the belts on The Club without the New Day eating the pin. So pretty cut and dry here. For me, anyway. The Club wins the straps, probably pins Simon Gotch or something. What do you think, KZ?
I am the opposite. I think if you watch Raw Monday, you saw what they – I mean, The Club won Monday. So that makes me think they're not winning here. And I think this is the way to get Enzo and Cass the belts without having New Day do the job. I think the Vaudevillains are the one to do the job to Enzo and Cass, and Enzo and Cass are the champions.
Okay.
And it sets up Enzo and Cass in The Club.
Right.
As a straight match. I think that's the way you go. So I think that's what they do.
Okay. Chad?
Yeah, I can kind of see it that way, too, where it's sort of like, you know, the Dudleys and the Hardys are the ones everybody's predicting, so Edge and Christian still the win, kind of the third and fourth team. So I can see that where New Day and Club are having a big battle with each other, and either Cat. I don't think the Vaudevillains are... pretty much think they had their shot, so I'd say it'd be Enzo and Cass picking up the titles. That would be sort of going with the hot hand right now. And from there, I think that does bring about some kind of interesting stuff that they could do. I think I would be surprised if New Day kind of comes out as the champions. I think it'll either be what we talked about or the Club will win.
I think they're breaking New Day up.
I was about to ask that. Do you think they get broken up in the brand split?
Yep, and I think it's time. It's time for Big E to go singles again.
Mm. Okay, what do you think, Chad?
Yeah, I've kind of I think gradually over the past few months with who I interact with on Twitter and what I've seen, and kind of my own personal feelings as well, New Day still is over and still feels like a thing, but just doesn't have the momentum they had probably 4 or 5 months ago. where they were one of the only good things going on TV. They feel a little long in the tooth now at points. So it's possible. I wouldn't think it would be egregious if they broke them up at this juncture.
All right. Next up, the match that people are biting their nails over, John Cena versus AJ Styles. Club banned from ringside. Styles decided to, I don't want to say half turn face again, but he took the contract without the club banned from ringside. Two things come from this. Number one, do we get a great match? I think we do. Number two, does this mean a new club member debuts? Because is the only club that they're consisting of, Gallows and Anderson, and someone else comes in. Or does Styles beat him clean? KZ?
Ooh, this is the most intriguing match on the show. I don't think a new member debuts, because I don't think they're going to do the Balor thing yet. Because they're out, they're building him and Nakamura for next NXT. So I don't think they do that yet. I do see something happening, though, screwy. I don't think we get a clean finish here. Maybe some interference from the club somehow, some way, or some type of double count out or something like that. I don't think we get a clean finish. If we do get a clean finish, Styles definitely needs to win. He definitely needs to win. And Cena did the clean job for Owens in their first match. So there's a template there if mm-hmm. they want to go that route. So
that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Okay. So you like AJ, your homeboy.
AJ or not finish, yeah.
Okay. Chad?
Yeah, this is the tiplet of how committed to me they are with the quote-unquote new era. Because this match is, if anything less than great, I will be disappointed in. I kind of liken it to the hype going into Nakamura versus Zayn. Mm-hmm. At NXT TakeOver Dallas, and that felt like a match that, you know, on paper looked great, and in my mind it delivered. AJ has just been amazing in the matches with Reigns. He has the Nakamura match from Wrestle Kingdom, so he's had a good year when he's been outside of Jericho.
No doubt.
So I think this has all the makings of could be an excellent, excellent match. And even a match worked to like SummerSlam 2013 between Cena and Daniel Bryan, which was not really, you know, a technical masterpiece in one sense, but kind of was like a modernized WWE style main event. I think they could certainly work that type of match, and it'd be great. I hope AJ wins clean because he needs a win badly to me to stay relevant. I think if he loses again here, we kind of know what his ceiling is, and he's already reached it in a lot of ways within the company. So I'm pulling for a clean win. I think that's what we'll get. I don't think we'll get Balor. I think that's just being teased, and they know they have it in their back pocket to kind of pull out whenever they want to. So I don't think we'll get that here. And I think we will get an AJ Styles victory. And to me, the key... Because the Owens victory versus Cena was great. The problem with that was they fought, two more times and Cena won.
Mm-hmm. And so to me, needs a win badly too,
yeah.
Chad. You know, he's done the jobs to Roman Reigns on two straight shows. He needs a big win.
Job to Owens as well in the qualifier. So this would be a big win. Because if you think about it, in the last three pay-per-views, AJ's lost because he lost a Mania 2 to... Jericho. This is one to me where he needs a win. They got the brand split coming up. Separate them. He gets his win, wins that, you know, 1 month off feud. They had their quote unquote dream match, you know, but there's heat, and he turned on him. So now he's a heel established. He gets his win versus Cena. He goes away. They can revisit that whenever they want to. But I don't want to see long-term him get a win here and then, you know, Battleground Cena wins, blah, 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 and then we're back to square one.
Right.
Just give him the win, separate them,
They both have plenty of things they can do that are interesting elsewhere.
Exactly. I agree. Now, I think that he should wear Georgia-colored tights. I think that'd be kind of sweet. And I think he should mock Cena by coming out in a Herschel jersey. Yeah, that's what I think that, too.
Be nice.
Well, we might get the black and red from AJ. Who knows?
Yeah, he does break out I guess the motive was like when he has his working boots on, it'll be the black and red. That's kind of been his that's New Japan staple the past couple of years. Hmm.
All right, time for the Money in the Bank ladder match itself. We have six participants. Kevin Owens, Cesaro, Sami Zayn, Chris Jericho, Dean Ambrose, and Alberto Del Rio. I've said, and Chad, you know it, I've said for 18 months that this match was Kevin Owens to win, and I still think it's Kevin Owens to win. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it feels that way. It certainly feels that way. I don't think... I mean, Sami Zayn, he's firmly established, always the bridesmaid. Jericho, you can't give it to him at this point really. In his career.
Yeah.
Alberto Del Rio, honestly, almost the same case. I mean, whatever. If you're in a bind, he's someone you could give it to, but there's plenty of better choices in this match, so no way. Ambrose, to me, is sort of treading water. I mean, he fought Jericho again on SmackDown last week, Raw this week. I haven't looked at the SmackDown spoilers, but I mean, what's going on there? I thought these guys were done. They had that atrocious match last month.
Ugh.
Ambrose won. What more is there to say? But now they're fighting again. So I don't know. They're kind of canceling each other out. So I'd say anything but Owens would be a pretty big upset.
Chris?
I think Owens is too obvious now. He's the betting favorite on the lines that are out. Should he win? Yes. But I think he's so obvious that they're going to do something else. And I would not be shocked if Cesaro came out as the winner.
Hmm.
Yeah, that would be that could be my second choice. Him
Mine
or
too.
Even I guess Zayn would be number three, but I just don't see it.
And I think it goes with his character. You know, he wears a suit. He's got and he comes up with he has the briefcase with him. I think it just adds to his little character he's got going on.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm picking Cesaro.
Okay, wouldn't surprise me.
And one thing too, I think what would help Cesaro's chances is if they are two world titles.
And I think that's what we're going to get.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think so, too. And finally, our main event for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, the long-awaited battle between your champion Roman Reigns and the returning Seth Rollins. One is a face, one is a heel. It's just the wrong guys. This match is going to end in a shit show, my opinion. I don't think you're going to see a defined winner here. Not at all. I don't know who causes it. Triple H run in?
I have an idea.
Enlighten us.
Now, I may be out in complete left field here. But I think the Wyatt family comes out and jumps both of them. And I think that it eventually is going to lead to the Shield reuniting to face the Wyatt family.
Hmm.
Because it's obvious that Reigns is going to be the champion still going to SummerSlam because I'm pretty much guessing that's going to be Reigns in the last SummerSlam. So, he's going to keep the title no matter what. Rollins needs to turn babyface in the worst way because, I mean, it's just so – it's got to happen. It should have been done. He should have been babyface when he returned. And they tease that stuff Monday night, you know, and they brought up the Wyatt's name. Wyatt's supposed to be coming back anytime now. They need something to get into. I think there's a chance it's going to happen. No matter what, I don't think a clean finish should happen in this match, no matter what.
Okay.
I
don't think so either.
So I think that they need a hot angle. So I could see why if it's not going to be Wyatt, it's going to be Orton. But that's where it's going, oh my God, Orton against Rollins again, or Orton against Reigns or whatever. And yeah, that's just what we need, but.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be the Wyatts. I just got a hunch, a feeling about it.
Okay. What do you think, Chad?
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. I was kind of thinking something
I agree. It's not going to be just clean as a whistle either way. Another thought I had in my mind was maybe Ambrose comes out there and, you know, some sort of kind of miscommunication or not purposely, but sort of inadvertently is jawing with Rollins or whatever they want to do. And then comes Reigns with a Superman punch or a spear or something to win, setting up a Shield match with the three of them. That was another thought I had, but it feels kind of too early in some ways to go to this match, because I agree Reigns is going to be the guy to hold in, but Rollins has just came back, and he felt fresh when he debuted, but now he's still kind of affirmed himself as a heel. I do think if the Shield, if they do reunite, that'll be, I think, good for all involved, actually, because you turn Rollins' face. He can be a face. Hopefully Ambrose gets some direction, and we're able to refine this lunatic fringe character to what he was when he was in the Shield, where I think he was able to hone that in a bit, and he didn't have the goofiness that derails the character aspects for me when he's outside of that environment.
Right.
And I think Roman can be Roman still. I mean, the guy, that's an interesting persona within a group to still be united with a group, but have some, have some intrigue and also some, I guess, animosity down the road.
Right.
I think that'd be great.
And I don't know if I would go like the full force and have them all like in their old Shield gear, but them be aligned together.
Right.
Not as officially the Shield, but them aligned together for this, because I mean, the next review is going to happen. Is it going to be before the draft or after? I can't remember which one is where the dates are lined up at.
The pay-per-view, you're talking about July. Battleground?
Yeah,
Battleground is on the 24th, so it'll be after.
Okay, the draft is tentatively held on, well, the rumor is the 18th in Providence.
Right.
So the draft would be before the pay-per-view, and the pay-per-view would be like the last show before the...
The draft is the 11th.
Well, yeah, I have seen 11, and I've seen the 18th lately. Though.
Oh, really? Maybe they moved it. Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they were going to move it to the 18th. So they would have the draft, then you have the pay-per-view as like the last show before the new television shows. So, I think that would be a fine match to run with, or something like that. And then you break them up in the draft. So they won't, as I said, they won't be together again. They'll be broken up. You know, two of them will be on one brand and one of them won't.
Yeah.
So there's ways of going about doing that. So, yeah.
Okay.
That's what I would do.
All right.
Yeah, I think Rollins and Ambrose, with whatever brand AJ is on, I'd put them together, and then I'd put Reigns and Cena on the same brand.
Well, see, that's the opposite of what they're going to do.
I know that's risky, and I guess they see those two as kind of your pillars.
Yeah, but Reigns is going to be the leader of Raw, pretty much, and Cena's going to be the one on SmackDown.
That's
interesting.
USA wants Cena on SmackDown to be the draw. So that's where he's going to be.
USA needs to find other programming.
They want more WWE programming.
That's right, yeah. What happened to La Femme Nikita? Anyway. All right, well, there is Money in the Bank this Sunday in Vegas.
What match do y'all think will go on last? That one? Or?
Yeah, like, Reigns Rollins.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, Reigns Rollins. Because even either Owens or, in Chris's case, Cesaro, I don't think that's a big enough thing to put last. It definitely Reigns and Rollins. Particularly,
Cena and AJ is going to be like it's going to be in the middle of the show.
Yeah, AJ and Cena will probably be like at quarter after nine.
And I tell you what, I would not be shocked if they did, to if they need a buffer match. And Meltzer's brought up in the Observer that just dropped tonight. There's already thoughts on how they time the show out to do a Golden Truth versus Breezango match.
Oh,
so I could see that match bridging Money in the Bank and the title match.
They should stick that in the pre-show and put one of these other two in the main show. Really, they should finally give Dolph Corbin a main show match. But anyway, and then, of course, Battleground will be the next pay-per-view outing, July 24th in our nation's capital.
And then, guys, I guess After SummerSlam, who knows? They may be having two a month.
That's what Lawler said. Oh,
my God. Are we going to have 2006 again where we had 3 in 4 weeks and two of them sucked?
It's going to be crazy.
Guys, this was great. This was a pleasure. Thank you for joining us tonight on Main Event. Plug time, like they do on Between the Sheets. Mr. Zellner, as we mentioned, your most recent Between the Sheets has come out. It is on the first page of PlacementNation.com. What do you got coming up?
Well, let's see. Go check that out if you haven't already. The 1997 Between the Sheets, 47. Mm-hmm. Exile on Bad Street, episode 27. Should be out in the next couple of days after this show drops with Bo James talking May 1988 through April 1989 of Continental Championship Wrestling, Continental Wrestling Federation, USA Championship Wrestling. All kinds of great stories there. A really fun show. Almost 4 hours long. A lot of just great anecdotes. Trying to think of some of the stories. A lot of stuff about Tommy Rich and Johnny Rich and Davey Rich. Who else? Mongolian Stomper. Ron Wright in his Nazi Stormtrooper deal where he was draping the Nazi flag over the set of USA Wrestling. it's all kinds of great stuff. We talk about Eddie Gilbert and David Woods, the stuff there when they broke up and Eddie left. Just a lot of great stuff on that show. The story of the Continental Cat, which you haven't listened to Between the Sheets yet, talking about the funeral of the Continental Cat. Well, Bo talks about the Continental Cat, talks about a funny story about how Jonathan Holliday got fired on television. And just all kinds of stuff that was going on. And Between the Sheets, the next episode, 48, we'll cover June the 14th through June the 20th of 2001. So first time we go to 2001.
Oh, wow.
And our guest this week would be Leonard F. Shikarason for the first time.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Great, great fan of the show. Been wanting to do one with him for a while, and we finally got him locked up. So, that's going to be a fun show. And the main story, and God, this is going to be a long story. This section, the WF section, could be the longest section we've ever done, one section. It's the vision that they had at WCW, what they were going to do with WCW. And this was like 2 weeks before they did the WCW tryout on Raw with Booker and Bagwell. So this is what they were thinking about going in, how they were, what their plans were, where they were going, and stuff like that. So that's the main story. And probably the second main story is Masahiro Chono replacing Riki Choshu as Booker in New Japan. And we'll talk about all the politics behind that. So loaded, loaded, loaded show. And I'm glad we finally got to 2001. So that was a great year in wrestling fandom for me.
Yep.
So, yeah, check it out.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Zellner. Chad, been a pleasure. You and I are not, as I said in the beginning, and I always say it, you and I are not on enough. And I look forward to being on with you again. For Chad Campbell, for Chris Zellner, I'm Scott Criscoli. You've been in the main event. We'll be back in 2 weeks. And see where we are with brand splits and pay-per-views and all that other fun stuff. And maybe I'll have Chris Zellner back on, and we will do the legacy of Jerry Blackwell. have a good 2 weeks. Jumping, not to be a brow. Holding it, Duffy.
Vietnam's call. See my work called the Army of the United States Marines. Cause ain't nobody handle this bad street scene.
Bad street in Atlanta, GA. Bad street in the whole USA. Bad street, nasty and hot.
The further down I block you with the better you got.
Bad street, nasty and hot.
Further down, I got you with a bell. Here, God.